and weddings. I'd have three or four, sometimes one or two weddings a day. They'd ask me when I would have time. They'd set their wedding for when I see a radio, be a radio preacher in that day. So it said I was told there were only about 25 or 30 regularly on the radio. See, they'd preach once in a while, but to be regularly, it'd come Sunday after Sunday. And too many times, fellows would say to me, I was active in the Kiwanis Club, and fellows would say to me, you're doing worthwhile service in giving that service. I heard your sermon Sunday, and I appreciate that. But right pretty soon after, some other fellow came on from New York, S. Parks Cadman. Yeah, that's the fellow. He said, you know, that fellow's a good preacher, too. So that was early days. Different from later.
Well, I suppose this would, in a sense, make the whole community your parish if you're on the air, because
yes,
they would all be conscious,
yes,
and aware of you.
Yes.
How large was the Wenatchee Church in those days?
Well, you couldn't quite judge the service by the membership. It was about, 275 or 300. But we'd get probably 100 to 150 that were not from the congregation at all.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd used to have a congregation of 400, and the radio men, I knew them well. I helped them to get the station in the Wenatchee, and they would kid me, said, well, you don't need to do so well, Sabria. They'd bring all the equipment out from the, they didn't have any equipment to go out to the church, and they'd bring the office equipment, the studio equipment out to the church. Well, it's pretty clear, nice day out, there won't be only maybe 4,000 this morning. So next Sunday it'll be a little rainy or something. Boy, you better have something worthwhile to say. It'll be 8,000 or 10,000 from your congregation this morning.
Well, I suppose they were giving some kind of a fair assessment of the probability.
Well, they according to their records, you know, they think they know how many people listen in. They told me one time that the Church of the Brethren was by far their featured program of the whole week.
Yeah.
And the Kiwanis Club was so much interested that they sponsored it, and they would take either once a quarter or maybe once in 6 months, each business firm would pay for the broadcast. They did that. I was called back to celebrate 35 years of broadcasting from the same pulpit. And so the president of the organization came out and especially recorded. And they were very much interested, and they just kept on until finally, since the Baptists and the Brethren have joined together, they've dropped the broadcast. The only difficulty was when you broadcast, you have to constantly be aware that you are talking to the group, and you've got to talk to the group on the broadcast rather than in the church. And we had an especially good choir director. They said we had one of the good choirs of the nation, and that was on the air. And of course that helped put me over. I'd like to have you and this fine group of your listeners would meet my wife, Coral Breon. She was first Coral Edna Beaver, and then Coral Cox, and now she's Coral Cox Breon. She's one of the nicest ladies in Hillcrest.
Well, Well, I wonder whether you could tell us about your background, what your maiden name was, who your father was, and your mother, and let us get some identification of where your background is.
I was born out on the farm near Fredericksburg, Iowa, 4 miles out of Fredericksburg. My father was Oliver James Beaver, familiarly known as O.J. My mother was Adeline Miller Beaver. My father was one of the pioneer farmers there at Fredericksburg. Very staunch Christian supporter of the Church of the Brethren. Father was first a farmer, and due to an accident, he was crippled and couldn't farm anymore, and he was interested in church work, and he was ordained as a minister in the Fredericksburg Church, which is now combined with the Baptist Church at Fredericksburg, and they've recently built a new building there, which grieves me because the old church was very precious to me. After he entered the ministry, it was hard for him to get transportation, which was by train entirely. And they sold the farm and moved to Nora Springs, Iowa, about 65 miles from Fredericksburg, where the Chicago, Milwaukee, and the Great Western had a junction. There he could go night and day, most any time of the day that he wanted to the different points. He was appointed by the church board at Elgin, and he traveled during the summer and carried a tent, a large tent. And where they didn't have a church, and there was a small group of our people, he would set up this tent and hold evangelistic meetings for about 2 weeks at a time in these different sections of the country. And in the wintertime, he held his meetings in the schoolhouses. Travel constantly, was never home more than just a few days at a time during all the period that I remember, from the time I was 5 years old until I was 16. Then I lost my train. He was still active in the service. He served the Northern Iowa, Southern Minnesota, South Dakota, and North Dakota was his district at that time. My oldest sister became ill, or had been ill for several years. And at a Waterloo district meeting, he said that he thought he was going to have to leave, but he would stay on until he could find a place where she could live. The doctor said she could not spend another winter in Iowa. He contacted the church board, helped him contact different places in the South, New Mexico and Arizona. And they finally found the little Glendale, Arizona church. And we moved there in 1904. And also at that time, Harvey Eikenberry, who lived at Green, Iowa, his oldest daughter was practically in the same physical condition that my sister was. Father persuaded Harvey, Uncle Harvey as we called him, to go with us to Arizona that winter. We went and visited my sister and found out that she was in such good health, something that was very, very joyous to all of us. Father went back, resigned from his work, and Uncle Harvey did too, and moved to Glendale, Arizona, 1904. And we lived there about till 1910, and she was so much better. And Father was anxious to get where there was a little bit more going on, and those were tough years in Arizona. No water to speak of, just barely enough to get along. Had to haul water to drink, and we enjoyed it. It was a wonderful community, and I have just noticed that the Little Glendale Church there is celebrating its 85th anniversary on the 26th of February. I'd kind of like to go.
Good.
Because I was 14 years old when we moved there and finished my high school years in Phoenix, Arizona, riding horseback 1 year, the 10 miles, paying tuition to go to high school. And then the year after I finished high school, we moved to California, 1910.
Well, that is real exciting. Now, you spoke about an Eikenberry in Greene. Did he have a son who remained in Greene?
No. His son lives here. They live here.
There was an Eikenberry who was sort of one of the mainstays of the Greene Church in 1939. When I was in college, I had a summer pastorate up there, and I can't remember his
name.
Well,
I don't know
the
history well enough. I was too young to keep track of the families. But we had an elderly elder there at that time whose name was John F. Eikenberry. But I don't know the family.
It was possibly some of his folks.
Uncle Harvey had a son by his first marriage, but he lived in Mason City, and he had never been connected with the church.
Now, the son that you referred to who is here, who is that?
Roy Eikenberry, Leroy Eikenberry.
I think we are.
And his daughter, his oldest daughter, the one I said, whom I said was ill, is living here at Hillcrest, too.
So you've been conscious of the development of the South for quite a few years.
Yes.
And,
I just sent back to Miss Bob at Elgin. I met her on a visit there in 68. All of the old history that my sister had collected. She used to travel when she was physically able to travel in the summer with Dad. And she had a beautiful voice, and she was educated musically and conducted singing classes for him before preaching services.
Please tell.
And she saved all the district meeting folders and wrote on little interesting things.
Now, people like that are very exciting to historians.
And all our old songbooks, and I sent them back. She said that some of it was just precious. The old Green Church, when it was a stone building without, just a bare stone building. The choir leader there for years, I had pictures. And she said they were just, they had nothing, she said, back then, at all.
Not Please so many tell and Raymond and Rowena about your relationship with Hillcrest Homes.
Well, I wanted to tell him about the little church.
All right.
We belong to a travel club here, and this has been some years ago. And they sing, of course, on the bus. And in traveling, somebody wanted to sing about the little church. And a friend from Waterloo was on the bus, and they said, ask Edna about the little church. And so they did, and they asked me, and I said, well, I've known that little church since I was a child, mere child. The fascinating thing to me was that Mother always made a bed on the bench for me. Those fascinating lamps that hung from the ceiling, coal oil lamps. Wondered why we couldn't have one in our house. And so many things, and I was so interested in my father because he was a dynamic preacher. He could just preach till no one went to sleep. No one went to sleep. He had a powerful voice, and he could talk along without any hesitation whatsoever. And I loved to listen. But the church was surrounded by huge evergreens. There was a burying lot in the back, and that interested me, although I could think of ghosts, you know, walking around out there. And somebody spoke up on the bus and said, oh, that's all fiction. Well, I said, it isn't fiction because I was there, and I will bring you the history of it because Dr. Pitts, who wrote the song, was our family doctor in Fredericksburg. They didn't know what to think about it. So every busload after that, I had to tell them that I knew about the little church.
Well, good.
Nashua, Iowa. It was called Bradford then.
Oh.
We drove from Norris Springs by horse and buggy, mother and the children, to go to grandfather's at Fredericksburg. And it was a 2-day journey by horse and buggy. And we stayed overnight with friends there at Bradford. And we always planned to go when father was preaching there. And we'd stay all night, be with him, and 9 times out of 10 he'd go with us to grandfather's, finish the journey with us. Then we came to California, and I was married. Worked many years. My first husband was in business 22 years in Claremont. And I came to work for Earl in 57, after he'd started West Hillcrest as secretary and bookkeeper. That's where we first met when he was pastor of the church. We became very, very good friends with Margaret. She was interested in music. My sister was interested in music. And we had a great friendship. Hillcrest is a great place to live.
I think it is. We're very impressed with it.
Mm-hmm.
And we were very excited about
first
the people
time
who live
been
here.
There?
No, not really. We were in Laverne a number of years ago. I taught for one semester here some years back on sabbatical, and sometime before that I'd been out here for a summer session. Our youngest girl started a school here, so it isn't entirely foreign.
It isn't new to you.
But
we're learning to know more about Hillcrest now than we have any time up.
Well, it really is. Has made progress.
It certainly seems like an exciting, wonderful place to be.
I'd like to have you go over to West Hillcrest and see Breon Chapel, named primarily for Margaret Meyer Breon. But trustees decided just to call it the Breon Chapel, and one of the beauty spots in all of Hillcrest.
We haven't seen it, but we will before we leave the area.
Certainly glad to have you come visit us.
Well, we're mighty happy to be here.
The interesting part about the chapel is the fact that the building was pretty well under construction. Several of the ladies, and Margaret was very interested in the chapel, and they decided to go ahead and build it. But where were they going to get the money? So Margaret worked with the people around there that knew, and I think she did as much as raising the money as anybody to build a chapel. She got, 10 people to donate?
More than that. Either $500 or more. I'd have to put it on the, it's in a chart on the, a plaque on the, wall over there. I believe there are about 19 interested.
And that's the way they got it, so that they could build it. It's a beautiful place.